Besides a great business plan, one thing that is always top of mind for entrepreneurs is where the initial capital will come from and how to keep the money flowing in to meet all the business needs. This is the Healthy Business Show. I'm your host, Fred Rode, and in this episode, Piet van Zyl, the co-founder of VC firm Knife Capital, who will be patched in via Skype, and later, CEO of Merchant Capital, Dov Guernem. We're going to look at the topics of financial literacy, managing debt, financial protection in tough times, and other crucial money matters. Piet, it's great to have you on the line. I've been a huge fan of the work that you've been doing for some time, and I just love the way you juxtapose the image of a serious investor and VC funder with this image of a leather jacket wearing Harley riding hooligan. And I believe that you're actually on your way somewhere now. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm taking a bit of time out to drive between Nashville and New Orleans down the Mississippi with a Winnebago and a Harley Davidson. So yeah, it's going to be some fun. But investing is a serious business, but at some point of your life, you've sort of earned the right to have fun while doing it, and being authentic also helps in this game.
Fantastic. I think there's a lot that's exciting that it certainly looks like from the outside looking in that you're busy with at the moment. What in particular has kept you busy recently that you're excited about?
I think just in general, very excited about the level of globally competitive innovation coming out of South Africa. It's always been there, but maybe a little bit under the radar, so to say. And just some of the companies we've invested in, and not just ourselves, the venture capital ecosystem, some of the corporate innovation coming in, some of the international venture capital companies have joined in and co-investing with companies like ourselves, Knife Capital. And I think the thing that excites us is just to just be blown away on a weekly basis by entrepreneurs. And at the end of the day, they are the key players here.
Have there been some particular examples that you can speak to? Is there anything in terms of the types of segments that you're looking at and the types of innovation that you're speaking of?
Yeah, I think one can maybe single out a few, maybe to be unfair to some of the other myriad of entrepreneurs out there. But if I think about our track record and stuff, so we've invested in fintech type companies, a company called Fundamo, mobile financial services, that had a big acquisition a few years back to Visa. That was $110 million. We've also sold some companies to General Electric, to Garmin, and last year a sort of food technology company to Uber Eats. So I think those are some of the gives us at least a bit of confidence that A, we have some platform or some formula to do what we're doing, and B, we are a little bit lucky. But most importantly, it speaks to the level of innovation, global innovation. And then if I just look at what's happening with some of the companies in the South African innovation ecosystem at the moment, it does range from agri-tech to drones to fintech to machine learning. You know, obviously I'm biased towards our own portfolio. So we've got a company called Data Profit, which is machine learning and AI for manufacturing. And they've got some really globally relevant clients. We've got investment in Quickit, which is sort of seamless ticketing software. PharmaScout, which is IoT in the pharmaceutical industry. But then there's also, you know, companies like Snaplify in the edtech space, Clickatel, which is, bulk SMS, also a global company that's also doing well in Nigeria, Aerobotics, which is agri-tech with drones, Yoko fintech, Intersect, which is sort of more involved in security, online security, Get Smarter, that people might know from the educational technology.
Sure.
I mean, and these are South African entrepreneurs that are really on the global scale competing and doing amazing stuff and getting investment, exiting, growing, and I think that is making this a very exciting space.
Sure. So there's some real diversity in the segments and certainly traction from a global perspective that we're starting to see in South Africa. So we're starting to fly the flag high and showing that also VC from your perspective really can work in this country, which I think has been held in as a bit of a doubtful position in the past. And I look at your trajectory, Kit, and the fact fact that, you know, you've come a long way since the early days when you worked with Mark Shuttleworth, and you started the fund with him, Here Be Dragons, I believe, HBD. And towards, you know, where you are now, what has changed in terms of the ecosystem, and, you know, what are the challenges that we still face, that we need to overcome?
When I joined HBD from Investec, I think it was in 2006-07, around there, so there's also a good 12, 13 years back. You know, since then, we ran that fund for a few years. Then we started Knife Capital, but still with Mark Shuttleworth, with HBD as an anchor client. And, you know, wrapping that fund up quite nicely last year with the exit to Uber. I think one of the key things that have changed is way back then, you know, the concept of risk funding and venture capital was very mythical. Not many companies could access it. There were lots of angel investment, as there is now or always, but there are only a few formalized VC funds. Also, the institutions didn't really come to the party. It's still a big drought out there. But you know, if it wasn't for the guys like Mark Shuttleworth, or, you know, Patrice Motsepe, or Rupert, or, you know, Michael Jordan more recently.
Sure.
There's a lot of innovative entrepreneurial individuals behind some of the angel investments and the VCs that are out there. What has changed is there's a lot more. The SARS came to the party a little bit with a Section 12J venture capital company structure. Basically, private investors and companies, anyone with a tax number, can invest in an approved venture capital company. You know, we are one of them. There are 150 others, by the way. And then they can deduct that investment from taxable income. So that has pushed a lot of sort of retail investors over the risk edge to say, okay, well, this is a risky space. I'm going to have a diversified portfolio and put some money into a 12J company and do get a tax break. So that has at least helped to put some money behind SMEs. But then, yeah, I think the landscape, incubators, accelerators, mentorship, market access, so the corporates are coming to the party as well much more now. I think they're a little bit scared of being disrupted. So this whole disruption agenda has really helped the entrepreneurs, because, you know, M&A is the new R&D. So instead of trying to innovate within your walls to say, well, let's partner with startups, let's partner with SMEs, and that's the way corporates kind of innovate, which also helps the SMEs to get market access. So I think the main changes are around the volume of things in this space, but there are still a few obvious gaps.
With regard to market access and looking at international markets for South Africa, obviously we're in the bottom end of Africa, which sometimes is seen as a massive obstacle for investability. I noticed, and we couldn't help but notice, you set up a partner office in London with Bob Skinstadt as one of the partners over there. Is that part of your trajectory now to start opening up international markets for local startups?
Yeah, it's actually part of it, but it's a sort of a two-way flow. On the one hand, it's not that we want every startup to now grow into Europe and into London necessarily, but it is good to have a base offshore, at least have a soft landing space into international markets. But it's also a little bit the other way around, the capital flow into South Africa. I mean, there's no doubt that the political risks and the intellectual property laws and those type of things of South Africa is still very, you know, protectionary. And yeah, there are a lot of South Africans and other investors that are quite keen to invest in South Africa, but via Mauritius, via London, via Luxembourg, via Delaware structures or whatever. So I think from that perspective, it's more for us to, on the one hand, help with access to international markets and networks, and on the other hand, to facilitate capital flow in of companies that aren't necessarily South African.
Sure. And that's very encouraging to see that there is still appetite for investment into Africa, and particularly the local ecosystem. In terms of that investability, Kit, what do you and your fellow investors actually look for? Are there some common traits? Are there certain things that you have? Do you have like a tick list that you could possibly share with us?
Well, I think the first tick list is that you have to invest in awesome people. And that is a very subjective tick list, but at the end of the day, you know, life is too short to make money with people that are not on your page in terms of excitement and so forth.
Sure.
But the magic happens where two things collide, and those two things are a good product or service and a large addressable market for that service. And then if you inject an entrepreneur that can execute a good product into a large market, well, that's sort of the magic, you know. So we firstly look at that element of it, which is the solid investment case. Good product, large market, execution abilities of the entrepreneur. There needs to be some competitive advantage of you know, barrier to entry, or, you know, we have to assume 100 other entrepreneurs are working on a similar product, and why will this one succeed? The business model needs to be scalable. I think that's just for us based because we have limited capital, so we don't want to invest in capital-intensive stuff. It's more innovation-driven, but that is now us in particular. The funding needs to go for growth, and one needs to know why. What happens 5, 6, 7 years from now? You know, it is a good company and a good investment is not necessarily the same thing. You know, a good investment depends on the valuation. It depends on what is the structure and strategy and so forth. And then, yeah, we look at strong culture and those more softer elements. But that one just picks up by being close to the entrepreneurs because, you know, things are going to get tough. And one needs to know how you're going to address sort of those times as a team together to get through it.
Sure, that's great. So good people, great product, good market, execution, scalability, future vision, and a culture that can grow with it. That's amazing, Kit, and really appreciate again your time on the way to the airport. And you're going to go hang out in a Winnebago and drive around the United States on a Harley. So we do wish you all the best for that.
Thanks, man. But yeah, I think before we log off, maybe just some hacks for entrepreneurs that might say, oh, how do I get access to funding?
Sure. You know,
I think firstly, funding is not the be-all and end-all. One has to look at how one combines that with some element of mentorship capital. You know, the people behind it, can they open, you know, networks and also access to market, as we touched on earlier? We sort of authenticity is one of the key elements, you know, to entrepreneurs need to also understand that there is an element of having a good product and having a financial model behind that product and a business model and all the rest of it. There is an element of gamification. You know, it is a networking game at the end of the day. So one has to get referrals from people who know, you know, who you want to get funding from. And maybe some pearl of wisdom is that, you know, if you want advice, ask for funding. And if you want funding, ask for advice. So entrepreneurs need to maybe look a little bit more carefully at who they select as their mentors around themselves. And yeah, just bounce it off people. And at the end of the day, these things lead to opening doors and leads to funding.
Awesome. That's amazing. Thank you. Dov, thank you for being in studio with us. You're heavily involved in the local funding space, and you're also not only the founder and CEO of Merchant Capital, but also the chairman of SASFA. So if you could maybe just explain a little bit about what SASFA is.
Yeah, sure, Fred. Thanks for having me. And it was fascinating hearing about Kurt's viewpoint of the world, but I must say I'm quite jealous about his upcoming trip. sounds pretty good. So let me answer your second question first. So we founded SASFA, which is a South African Small Finance Association. And essentially what it is a self-regulating body, which was founded by the main players in the alternative finance space in South Africa. So that would be ourselves, Merchant Capital, Retail Capital, Lula Lend, and Transaction Business Services. So we really took a leaf out of the global precedent, what has happened in our space, specifically in the US, Europe, and Australia, where typically alternative finance for small business owners is not regulated. So we took a proactive step to say, let us self-regulate ourselves. So first of all, when regulators do come into the space, we are quite front-footed and have been proactive in setting up some sort of regulation. But more so, as this space grows in South Africa and the lenders become more homogeneous, we wanted the clients, or the merchants in our words, who are actually taking out the funds, to have some comfort as to who the lenders are that are providing them with product. So if you're a SASFA member, you have to adhere to a code of conduct, which is what we've developed. And really, that code of conduct speaks to responsible lending, not punitive interest rates, actually selling what your sales team talks about, treating your customer fairly, etc. So we feel that in a space that is relatively nascent at the moment, as the space grows, this SASFA, or the self-regulating body, will be an important value add to the alternative lending space.
Awesome. I think from my own perspective of being an entrepreneur, it has in the past two decades really felt sometimes like trying to find money has felt a little bit like the Wild West. So I guess that's kind of what you're addressing, right? It's trying to bring a little bit of regulatory oversight to the industry.
Yeah, exactly. I think exactly to your point, and specifically in South Africa, sort of consumer micro lending has been tarnished with a bad brush. So we want to make sure that we as business lenders are seen as credible, responsible lenders. And, you know, we're not lenders of last resort. We're lenders for the growth of small business in South Africa. And really, by starting this association, you know, we thought there would be front foot. And we welcome all alternative lenders in South Africa to join SASFA. Because we believe that as the industry grows, it's going to be a good place to host all the incoming alternative lenders.
What are some of the different ways that funding can be obtained? I mean, if I'm a startup business, I mean, I think, you know, particularly in my experience, and I personally mentor a number of young entrepreneurs, I know that it's quite difficult. Where do I start, and what are the options available to me?
Yeah, Fred, that is the million-dollar question, I guess. And I'm going to talk more about the space that we operate in. I guess Kia spoke about VC and startup funding. So we are not in the startup funding space. We are more in the growth funding space. So once you are a business and you have got some track record, and, you know, you've got some people actually buying the product that you're selling, really the next step to take your business to the next level is growth capital or working capital. And I guess your alternatives there are limited, right? Because the banks typically, the existing incumbents, don't fund early stage high risk businesses. And they like to see track record and collateral. So, and I think specifically now in this environment that we're in, where sentiment is down, consumer spending is down, growth is down, if the banks ever were playing in this space, they've pulled out even further. So the options that an entrepreneur or business owner would have is firstly, the obvious one is friends and family, right? And we obviously recommend against that for obvious reasons, but sometimes that can work out. Secondly is if you can motivate to your bank for an overdraft or credit card. The problem with those two options is they are exhaustive and they're definitive, so they run out, right? And then thirdly would be, you know, going to look at alternative finance providers, which is the space that we currently play in. There's a couple of derivatives in between that, but I would say those are your three main options as a small business or an entrepreneur trying to grow your business.
Can you talk a little bit into how's government assisting the industry at the moment? Are you feeling it, or do you feel like, particularly with SASFA and the viewpoint that you have there, that, you know, we kind of have to, you know, shake it by the lapel and make it work? Or do you think it's starting to happen
now? So Fred, I think the intentions are there. Certainly there's been the SME fund that is set up, and, you know, you've got the big corporate CEOs like Adrian Gore, etc., who are involved in that. So I think the sentiment and the intent is there. The problem that these guys have is actually understanding entrepreneurs and understanding the requirements and what these guys need to grow their business. So there's no one-size-fits-all product for these guys. So a big fund hosted or funded by government is only, in our view, going to help a fraction of the SME space, because these guys have tailor-made requirements that they need, and really only entrepreneurs can understand what these entrepreneurs need. So I do think they are moving in the right direction. You know, we hope that this can alleviate some of the huge funding gap that currently sits in South Africa, which could assist with the systemic problems we're having with unemployment and crime, etc. So there's definitely moves in the right direction. The fact that big business, private business, has got involved, I think, is fantastic. You know, it's great to see the likes of Adrian Gore, et cetera, who are really putting their money where their mouth is and trying to support SMEs.
Dov, you've got experience of both local and international funding environments. Can you talk a little bit to the difference that you're experiencing and the challenges in particular that we're experiencing here and why it's important that we overcome these challenges and really stimulating the entrepreneur sector?
Yeah, I think the stimulation of the SME entrepreneurial sector is fundamental to the success and growth of the South African economy. The main difference, Fred, that we see is that the whole Silicon Valley hype around, you know, big exits and valuations is only relevant in Silicon Valley. And really in South Africa, and I guess in most other developing markets in the world, you know, businesses need to make a profit or show good revenue and show good growth in order to be investable. So people unfortunately get jaded by these stories that they read about these so-called unicorns in Silicon Valley. But really the truth is that you still need to build a solid business with solid foundations, good operating systems, good people, good culture, good financial management in order to be investable, and in order to grow your business. So I think people need to really focus back on the fundamentals of growing a business, about finding a big enough market where the people want to buy your product, having the right team, investors, shareholders, and culture to actually try and build that business.
At what point should an entrepreneur sell or at least sell a part of his business? I guess that's also a million-dollar question.
That is the million-dollar question. So I guess I'll talk a little bit from our personal experience, and I haven't exited a business yet. So I guess, and it goes to what Kurt was speaking about earlier, is the fundamental characteristic that one needs in a shareholder or an investor is stating the obvious: you need capital, but really it's smart capital. So you need an investor who can come into your business that can help you scale. Now that could be different in different industries. That could be opening up networks. It could be introducing you to new technologies. It can be helping open doors into different geographies or whatever that may be. But really it's about finding partners who first and foremost are aligned culturally and have the same vision and values that you as the founders of the business have, because if there's conflict there, it's never going to work. And secondly, these guys need to have a vested interest in the product or service that you're selling and actually believe in it. So it's not just a financial investor who's looking to make a return, but rather a strategic investor who can open doors, provide a network, be a mentor, and obviously provide you with sufficient capital to help grow your business.
You've had experience with investing in a good number of businesses. What does a healthy business look like?
So I think that answer depends on the industry, the vertical that you're talking about, et cetera. But I think just as a rule of thumb, I mean, interestingly, if you simplify it to a micro level, one thing that we look at, and I'll talk about some of the other attributes in a minute, but businesses that are owner managed is very important, right? So if you are funding a woman's retail business that a wealthy husband has bought for his wife just to keep her busy, but she's never there and she just hires a manager, you know, you can feel it when you walk into the shop. You know, this manager is behind the till, they're on their phone, they are genuinely not interested. The difference that you feel, or when you go to a restaurant as an example, when you've got the owner of the restaurant there, just the level of service and the passion is completely different. So owner managed is very important. A healthy business needs to have a very good understanding of the unit economics of their business. So they know that for every employee that they recruit, they're going to make X amount of money, or the service, they can mark up the service by X margin and therefore going to make a certain return. So really understand the nitty-gritty of the details of your unit economics of your business. In addition to that is know your finances and numbers very well. So if you are not a finance or a numerate person, make sure you hire the best possible finance person that you can afford. Because if you don't have insight and visibility into the income statement and balance sheet of your business, irrespective of the size of your business, you know, why would someone look at investing in you if you don't understand your numbers backwards? And then I think lastly, and this is probably more of a subjective, softer issue, but really there needs to be a passion and a belief in the product that you're selling. You know, and that can be whatever it may be. But if you need to be a genuine passion in what it is that you're doing comes out. You know, I always think of what Stephen Kosser from Investec says, is that they hire for attitude, not for technical skill. You know, so people need to be positive, proactive, and have a good attitude towards what they're doing, irrespective of the level of the organization or the size of the business.
That's great. So passion, the unit economics, understanding of the money stuff and the culture. So I think lastly, you advise entrepreneurs and business owners. You see the commonalities in successful businesses and the aspects of business that they really need to look after. Can you speak to some of those areas that you would really kind of look to and potentially some of the innovations that are accessible to entrepreneurs these days.
Sure. I guess it's relevant talking about the current state of the economy that we're in now, right? So you're either a business owner or an entrepreneur who is an optimist, so half glass full or half glass empty. And what we're seeing across our, you know, thousands of existing customers is that the guys who are complaining and saying, well, we're waiting for elections and there's load shedding, those are the guys that won't succeed. Because they almost are giving up. But the other percentage, or the other half of the guys who are seeing opportunity in the chaos, are the guys who are innovating. You know, they're the ones who are saying, right, we've got certain taxes, if for lack of a better word, about living in the country, right? I need to get a generator so that when there's load shedding, I can still operate. If people are selling at bargain sales, I need to find opportunities. If I'm a small business owner in a mall and I'm seeing lots of shops closing around me, I know the landlord is under pressure. Let me go negotiate my next 12 months rental. Tell the landlord I'll be there for the next 12 months, but give me a 20% discount. So I think it's about finding opportunities in the chaos that we're currently experiencing. And interestingly enough, we are seeing a certain section of our portfolio where the guys are actually doing better than they were doing in the good times, because they're seeing opportunity, they're being innovative, they're being front-footed, they're taking calculated risks, and they're just being positive about it. Because I think the alternative is, you know, around the negativity is you might as well close your doors, because if you're blaming all the external things that you actually have no control of, it's going to be very difficult to succeed in a difficult environment.
Essentially, what we're saying is the entrepreneurial heart beats strongly in South Africa. And I think if you look at your perspective on things at the moment, and certainly in comparison to internationally, and I mean, we're seeing little hubs and hotspots being developed all over the world, like, you know, Tel Aviv, and you've also got Beijing and Tallinn in Estonia and Shoreditch in London.
Yes.
You're looking at these ecosystems and these really thriving, exciting hubs that are fostering amazing results. Mm. So you mentioned unicorns. I mean, we're seeing, you know, in a tiny little country like Estonia, four unicorns coming out of a country of 1 million people in the last decade. I mean, it's incredible. However, in the whole of Africa, if you look at the startup culture, we have only one unicorn, one company that has $1 billion valuation, a startup, which is Jumia, right? In Nigeria, we have this entrepreneurial spirit, and you've seen it, and you've seen the guys who look at innovation where there's problems.
Yes.
What are we missing?
It's a valid question, and I would need to think about it a little bit further. But one thing I do find about South African entrepreneurs or African entrepreneurs is they struggle to elevate themselves and look at their business and product offering on a global basis. So whereas people in Stockholm or Berlin or Tel Aviv, you know, when they are building product or building technology, they're thinking about global application. Whereas in South Africa, the entrepreneurs that we see are looking to build a solution for a very small market. You know, there may be lots of people, but their addressable market may be quite small. So I would say, you know, one word of advice, which I personally do, because I find also I get you know, as the leader of a business, you get entrenched in the day to day and you're in the trenches, right? So very occasionally, but I'm trying to do it more often, is to elevate myself out of it. And whether that's traveling to overseas conferences, or I've been fortunate enough to go to Harvard Business School for an executive education course. I'm going again now in August to Stanford in Silicon Valley. So it's about being exposed to more global thinking, and just elevate your actual mindset and actually think that just because we're from South Africa or Africa doesn't mean that what we're doing here is not global, that there's not applicability globally. And that is how you start getting these unicorn type of valuations. You almost have to think big to get big.
I couldn't agree more. I think that we certainly do have the talent and we have the ability. It's just about that I suppose the character and the mindset of an entrepreneur. And if we have the entrepreneurs and we have the great ideas and we have the vision, do we have the money to invest in them? I mean, from your perspective.
So I guess that talks to what Kurt was mentioning earlier, is that in the last couple of years, you have seen this emergence of a VC culture in South Africa. It's not what you're seeing in Silicon Valley for obvious reasons, but the rate of change is quite high. So I do think there is that opportunity. And also what you're starting to see is a lot of the big incumbents who certainly do have the money are starting to either create their own fintech incubators or startup incubators, or investing in entrepreneurs or businesses. So I'm hoping that that combined with the private VCs, they will then see a shift in the quantums of capital available for these entrepreneurs.
Dov, lastly, what are your top pieces of advice in terms of becoming investable and really being an investable company?
Fred, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. So off the top of my head, there's no specific order. The top five things would be: make sure that you understand your finances and unit economics very well. Because as I said, if you don't understand them, or you don't have a partner who doesn't, then you know the investor's going to ask questions. Number two would be passion. You need to demonstrate genuinely and authentically the passion that you have for this business, because the investor is, if there's a problem in the business, they want you up at 4 o'clock in the morning, anxious and worrying about it before they do, right? The third thing would be try and find a product that has applicability for a large market. Because if you're trying to go after a niche, but your market is limited to 100 or 1,000, it's going to be very difficult to scale that business. So try and find something that doesn't require huge amounts of capital, and then you can rather leverage economies of scale and get to scale through technology or whatever that may be. Fourthly, you know, you need to cover the bases when it comes to just building a simple business. So you need to have access to a good HR system, which would be from a cultural point of view. If you're a retail business, you would need to have business insurance. You know, you would need to have business interruption insurance, because if there's something goes on and you can't trade for 3 weeks, which is out of your control, those 3 weeks can put your business out. So business insurance, the right cover and business insurance is very important. And lastly, I think the probably the most important thing as well is having the right team around you. So to simplify it, if you are a person who is very numerate and good with numbers, but you are building a marketing business or that needs a big sales-led organization, try and find the best marketing or salesperson that you can find. And try not duplicate your management team. Try have complementary skills across your executive team that can actually add. So 1 + 1 must be equal to 3. And just try and afford, you know, obviously subject to affordability, the best possible people that can help grow your business.
I love that. I think it speaks a lot to me. In my old business, which I sold a few years ago, my business partner was way stronger in terms of the structural elements of the business, and I was more the sort of outgoing, kind of the networking type.
Exactly,
and,
right.
And we used to say, I would make the promises and Mike would keep them. Dov, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate the wisdom and the experience, and really excited about Merchant Capital and the work that you're doing with SASFA. It's a really exciting space to be, as we've heard today, and we look forward to the next leg of your journey.
Great. Thanks for having me, Fred. It's been fantastic. Thank you.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Healthy Business Show. If you love this podcast, do let us know via social media. Tag @discovery_SA. Use the hashtag DSY Healthy Business, and please do rate us on your favorite podcast platform, whether it's Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your shows. You can also find more episodes on the Discovery website at discovery.co.za/corporate/podcasts.